We're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 4th canto, 7th chapter, verses 24-38. Although the mental scope of even demigods like Brahma was unable to comprehend the unlimited glories of the Supreme Lord, they were all able to perceive the transcendental form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead by His grace. Only by such grace could they offer their respectful prayers according to their different capacities. So Lord Shiva replied to Lord Brahma's prayers that he didn't take the offenses of the demigods very seriously because they were just like his children, Balanam. And Daksha then prayed to Lord Shiva that he is Pashupati, just like a cowherd boy with a stick in his hand who always protects the regulative principles of the Brahmins. So Lord Shiva mercifully chastised Daksha, which meant that he saved him from falling to a hellish condition. Then, finally, Lord Vishnu appeared in the sacrificial arena. And now all the demigods, the sages, and other participants of the sacrifice, Brahma, Indra, Bhrigu, they will all offer prayers according to their own realizations, the depths and the heights of their realizations. And there will be so many prayers today and tomorrow. We'll hear all the prayers. And we'll see also how these prayers follow one another in sequence, actually. And Burijan gave a nice comment that how everyone sees the world according to their own mind. And in modern psychology, it's called projection. That even, he said, even our realizations of Krishna, unless we're 100% pure, we don't have like full realization because our mind determines what we see in Krishna. Krishna, he can give us everything. He says in the 4th chapter, yaya tamam prapadyante tam sataiva bhajamyaham. So according to our vision, according to our realization, Krishna will reciprocate with us in that way. Some are angry with Krishna. Some are afraid, awe and veneration. Some are his friend. Some are loving. Some see that Krishna will solve all my problems. Or some think, oh yes, he will give me the money when I need it. And some think, oh, he will protect me. So in whichever way that we expect or we are looking for Krishna, in that way he will reciprocate with us. So when we look at Krishna as a very big controller, creator, destroyer, we become afraid. We get awe and veneration, respect, but not much intimacy. The example is given of a king. The prisoner sees the king as his enemy, whereas the subjects see him as a friend. But his family members, they see him as just their father or their son or their friend. So the Burijan gives another example. The friends from school may know he's the king and in front of everyone else they'll offer their respects. But when they're alone with him, they'll slap him on the back and they'll joke with him. So many things. So here, this relationship that we are going to hear about now is awe and reverence. Although there will be one example of a little bit more intimacy with the Lord. So in verse 24, it explains that although they couldn't understand his glories, they were able to see the form of the Lord. They couldn't understand him, but they could see him. So that is why. What was the reason that even though they couldn't understand him, that they could see him? What is the reason given here? His mercy, right. By his mercy, they could see him. And there is this, by his mercy, they could also offer their prayers to him. So the mercy came in two ways, that They were given the ability to offer prayers and they were given the ability to see the beautiful form of the Lord. So in the purport, five lines down, Prabhupada says, it is not possible, a little bit more than five lines down, for any ordinary living entity, that's the goal. He never rests. Okay, well that's transcendental. That's transcendental. So that is something for us to desire, to aim for, but we cannot imitate. or else we'll just... Anyway, something will happen. Yes.
Ultimately, we want to enter the transcendental plane and take back our transcendental service.
Yes, we want to enter the transcendental plane and take back our transcendental service, resume or take back our transcendental service. Okay, here's Virgin's comment. Does it mean we have to double everything? No, we have to increase the serving mood, which is a product of our appreciation of Krishna. So now here's what he says. When the external manifestation of service is based on the internal increase, then it is substantial. The external must be based on the increase of the internal. So I thought that was a very interesting comment by Bhairajan Prabhu. Verse 25. When Lord Vishnu accepted the oblations offered in sacrifice, Daksha, the Prajapati, began with great pleasure to offer respectful prayers unto him. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is actually the master of all sacrifices and preceptor of all the Prajapatis, and he is served even by great such personalities as Nanda and Sunanda. So now we will hear the prayers beginning with verse 26 and beginning with Daksha. Yes. No, Nanda and Sunanda. That is they're in Vaikuntha. They're the main devotees, some of the main devotees of Lord Vishnu. So they are always with him. Not Nanda Maharaj. Not Nandishwar. There's Nanda and Sunanda in the spiritual world. So verse 26. Daksha uvacha shuram svatam yo paratakira buddhyavastam chinmatramekama bayam patisityamayam tishtam stayaiva purushattamapetatasyam aste pavanna parishudaiva matantra. Daksha addressed the Supreme Personality of Godhead. My dear Lord, you are transcendental to all speculative positions. You are completely spiritual, devoid of all fear, and you are always in control of the material energy. Even though you appear in the material energy, you are situated transcendentally. You are always free from material contamination because you are completely self-sufficient. So here on the flip chart and also on the board in a very brief, concise form, I've got all the speakers. And on the flip chart, there's the verse numbers as well, and their view. So you can look, you can follow along with their view, and then I'll also explain what is the connection between the first and the next prayer, between the different prayers as they go. I see a connection, and Prabhupada in one purport even gives a connection. So I got inspired by Prabhupada's purport and started looking for connections. And I found that they were connected, actually. So you can agree or disagree with me, or you can perhaps find also connections. Yes. So here, of course, there's no previous prayer, so he's just stating the fact that the Lord is the controller, he's transcendental. And now let us hear what the priests have to say. And when we hear what they say, then our previous discussions of the position of the priests will become more self-evident. Actually, what is their position? Because we were saying, well, you know, why are they like this? Why are they called, why is Sati calling them, you know, flatterers and all these things? So now we'll hear what they say. So verse 27. The priests address the Lord saying, O Lord, transcendental to material contamination, by the curse offered by Lord Shiva's men, we have become attached to fruitive activities, and thus we are now fallen, and therefore we do not know anything about you. On the contrary, we are now involved in the injunctions of the three departments of the Vedic knowledge under the plea of executing rituals in the name of Yajna. We know that you have made arrangements for distributing the respective shares of the demigods. 27. Is it? Yeah. I'm right. We're in chapter 7. No, 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 no. Yeah, it was.
Yeah, so what verse is that?
I don't know what verse says. Oh, yeah, it'll come, actually. The curse will come. The curse will come. So, noticed in there, in this English here, the second to the last sentence, there's two phrases. On the plea, they say, what is this? Yeah, on the plea of... under the plea of executing rituals and in the name of yajna. So by their saying these two things, under the plea of executing ritual in the name of yajna, they're saying that we are actually hypocritical. That we're saying we're doing yajna, we're saying we're doing rituals, but actually we're just attached to the result. We want the result. We're attached to fruitive activities. So they're posing themselves as fallen Brahmins attached to the rituals of the Vedas.
That's natural.
Yeah, they're okay. So Braj Bihari brings up the point, it's natural because they're Ritviks. It says Ritvija. And that's where the original Ritviks came from. No. Anyway. What's that? Yes, they're and he's just making a joke, so don't take it seriously. Okay. As they are being very humble. And although they are saying that although they're engaged in Vedic sacrifices, they have lost sight of the Lord. They're posing themselves, we are Veda Vadaratas. So they're cursed to be attached to fruitive activities, interested in sacrifice. So the last verse, Daksha said, the Lord is transcendental. And they begin their verse by saying, O Lord, transcendental to material contamination. That we are cursed, so therefore we cannot understand your real position. We're so attached to these fruitive activities, we cannot understand you. So this is how they are posing themselves as fallen Brahmins. So then the next... Oh, and the curse. The curse, if you remember, that is in 4.2, 21 through 25. So there it says that pretentiously religious householder life in which one is attracted, this is 4.2.22, to material happiness and thus also attracted, the superficial explanation of the Vedas robs one of all intelligence and attaches one to fruitive activities as all in all. So that was the curse, and that is what they are saying, that we are affected by this curse and therefore we could not understand you. So then verse 28, we have the members of the assembly address the Lord. O exclusive shelter for all who are situated in troubled life. In this formidable fort of conditional existence, the time element, like a snake, is always looking for an opportunity to strike. This world is full of ditches of so-called distress and happiness, and there are many ferocious animals always ready to attack. The fire of lamentation is always blazing, and the mirage of false happiness is always alluring, but one has no shelter from them. Thus, foolish persons live in the cycle of birth and death, always overburdened in discharging their so-called duties, and we do not know when they will accept the shelter of your lotus feet. So they are giving us the view of those who are entrapped, the mass of conditioned souls entrapped in this fort of material nature. So in the last verse, the Brahmins were saying, we are so fallen, we don't understand you. And now they are saying, we are even more fallen because we're suffering in this fort of material nature and cursed, and not cursed, but we're suffering, burning on the path of repeated birth and death. So when and how will we accept the shelter of your lotus feet? So we are also fallen. Look at our position. So remember in Mahabharata, because here is a beautiful analogy about the material world. The time is like a snake, and the world is full of ditches of happiness and distress, and the fire of lamentation is always blazing. The mirage of happiness is alluring. So in Mahabharata, remember last year we discussed the analogy of, again, of the material world. When Yudhisthira Maharaj was asked, "What is the news?" And he replied, so he said, "This material world, which is full of ignorance, can be compared to," remember what it is, this world? Frying pan. Yes, it's a frying pan. And the sun is the fire. And days and nights are the fuel. Passing seasons, stirring ladle, you remember it. And time, what is time in this analogy? No, we already got the spoon. That's the passing seasons. Yeah, well, it's close to this, very close to the stirring ladle. It's the cook. The cook is time. He's frying all creatures in this world. So here he's compared to the snake who is ready to strike, and in that analogy, he's the cook. So this is also in 7th canto, 9th chapter. I don't have the exact verse, but Prahlad Maharaj says, there is a plan for material nature, personally known as Durga, and they are directly attacked. All the demons are directly attacked by her with her 10 hands, where she carries different types of weapons. She's carried by her line carrier, the modes of passion and ignorance, and everyone struggles hard to fight through these modes. At the end, everyone is vanquished. So this is the news of this world. This purport, Prabhupada says, persons who are not in Krishna consciousness are living a very precarious life, as described in this verse. But all these circumstantial conditions are due to forgetfulness of Krishna. The Krishna conscious movement is meant to give relief to all these bewildered and distressed persons. Therefore, it is the greatest relief work for all human society, and the workers thereof are the greatest well-wishers, for they follow in the footsteps of Lord Chaitanya, who is the greatest friend to all living entities. So here is Prabhupada's mood and mission, that as soon as Prabhupada hears about the horrible situation of this world, immediately he is, what is that? He's trying to make us enthusiastic to go out and preach. He's enthusing us. He's trying to convince us we should go and preach. That's the purpose of this movement. So verse 29, Lord Shiva is speaking. Utravacha tavavaravarangrav Ashishika kilate Nabi Mani Bira Saktai Adarena Hariye Nari Rachitati Yama Vityaloka Pavitam Japatina Ganayetat Tvat Paranitahena. Lord Shiva said, "My dear Lord, my mind and consciousness are always fixed on your lotus feet, which, as the source of all benediction and fulfillment of all desires, are worshipped by all liberated great sages. Because your lotus feet are worthy of worship. With my mind fixed in your lotus feet, I am no longer disturbed by persons who blaspheme me, claiming that my activities are not purified. I do not mind their accusations, and I excuse them out of compassion, just as you exhibit compassion toward all living entities." So, Lord Shiva, he is showing us the position of the tolerant Vaishnava, who is always excusing, forgiving those who blaspheme him. So previously the position, the members of the assembly, it represented the mass, the position of the mass of conditioned souls suffering, burning on the path of repeated death. So Lord Shiva, the tolerant Vaishnava, friend of the fallen, uplifts the fallen masses of people, even though they may sometimes blaspheme him. So this is, you have the suffering people, you have Prabhupada's purport, and you have Lord Shiva, who's ready to now tolerate any sort of blasphemy for the sake of uplifting the fallen souls. So the end of the purport, Srila Prabhupada says, "The recommendation of Srimad Bhagavatam is that one should always be Krishna conscious and should never forget his transcendental relationship with the Lord. This program has to be followed strictly by everyone." So what's our strict program? Without looking at your books. What? Sadhana bhakti. Okay? Never forget. Actually, this verse, there is a verse from Nectar of Devotion. I think it's originally from Padma Purana. And that is, this verse is paraphrasing the ultimate in sadhana. What is the rule that must be followed? Yeah. Satatam Vishnur. Vismartavam. So Prabhupada saying, always be Krishna conscious and never forget your relationship with Krishna. Always remember Krishna. From the statement of Lord Shiva, it is understood that he was always in Krishna consciousness, and thus he remained free from material affliction. The only remedy, therefore, is to continue Krishna consciousness rigidly in order to get out contamination of material modes. So Kapila Dev, if you remember last year, he was saying that this devotional service to Krishna is Nishreya Saya. It's the ultimate benediction. And actually, the conditioned souls, they don't want this ultimate benediction. So therefore, Prabhupada explains that in one lecture that the scriptures, the sages, the saints, the devotees, they're very anxious. They're trying to drag us back to home, back to Godhead, even though we don't want to go. So this is a thankless task of the devotees, and Lord Shiva is representing the sadhus, the tolerant Vaishnavas of the Lord. So that they're fallen conditioned souls, and Lord Shiva is the tolerant Vaishnava who uplifts them. At his mood, okay, we have all these fallen souls now.
He also says there are some of these people are claiming that my activities are not purified.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't pick up on that. I just took the part where even though they blaspheme me, I'm ready to tolerate and help them. I picked up on that. His mood. So Sri Bhrigu said, my dear Lord, all living entities, beginning from the highest, namely Lord Brahma down to the ordinary ant, are under the influence of the insurmountable spell of illusory energy, thus they are ignorant of their constitutional position. Everyone believes in the concept of the body, and all are thus submerged in the darkness of illusion. They are actually unable to understand how you live in every living entity as a supersoul, nor can they understand your absolute position. But you are the eternal friend and protector of all surrendered souls. Therefore, please be kind toward us and forgive all our offenses. So Bhrigu, he is begging the Lord for forgiveness. He's putting himself in the position of someone who has committed an offense. I am an offender. So please forgive me. You are the super soul. You are the friend. You are the protector. Now I'm surrendered to you. So please forgive me. So the connection that I got here was that Lord Shiva may forgive, but the Lord does not. So Bhrigu's asking the Lord, please forgive me for these offenses. And also begging forgiveness indirectly to to Shiva. And Srila Prabhupada was explaining in the purport that Bhrigu was conscious of the scandalous behavior exhibited by each and every one of them. So he's begging forgiveness for everyone. And in the second half of the purport, conscious that he was not greater than Brahma, Bhrigu included himself in the list of offenders. Ignorant personalities or conditioned souls have no choice but to accept their precarious condition under material nature. The only remedy is to surrender to Vishnu and always pray to be excused. So this is our remedy. Only remedy. What's our only remedy? Pray to Krishna. What is that? Surrender? Yeah? Madhavendra? Yeah, that's the next sentence. One should depend only on the causeless mercy of the Lord for deliverance and not even slightly on one's own strength. What does that mean? You shouldn't do anything? Fully depend on Krishna. You can't depend on our own strength for deliverance? Right. That is a perfect position of a Krishna conscious person. The Lord is everyone's friend, but he's especially friendly to the surrendered soul. The simple process, therefore, is that a conditioned soul should remain surrendered to the Lord, and the Lord will give him all protection to keep him out of clutches of material contamination. Yes? Yeah. Well, he's begging, so he's going to the Lord. He knows that Shiva's already forgiving. Now he's going to the Lord. He knows the Lord doesn't forgive. So he's begging, please forgive me. He's also begging the Lord, you please forgive my offense. You please forgive.
You say the cause is mercy.
Yes.
Doesn't that imply forgiveness?
It does, but still, Vaishnava Aparad is something else. The Lord does not like. The Lord is very upset. Vaishnava Aparad. The Brijan made a really nice statement here. One should act on one's own strength, but not depend on it. That was good. You act on your strength, but don't depend on it. Just like Arjuna, he fought on his own strength, but he depended on Krishna. So we have to remember this, these things, when we actually act in Krishna consciousness. So just the example of Krishna not forgiving is that Arjuna, he forgave Duryodhana. He was ready to forgive the offense, but Krishna said, no, you have to fight.
It's
right. That's, who is that?
Cardinal sin.
Cardinal sin?
Yeah, he told that to his mother.
Yeah. I heard it's from Thomas Aquinas originally. Saint Thomas. It's a Christian saint.
I don't know how much, this would be a long discussion, but.
Yeah, we'll have a little.
What's the difference between offense and karma? In other words, you get reactions for offenses, right? And you get reactions for sinful activities. But it seems like there's been, like I've heard, for example, that in this heavenly planets, you don't get karma, but you can commit an aparad. And I think it's an important question for us in certain fields.
What I want to know first is if you can clarify your question. That are you speaking about the reactions that come to us? If are you saying that what's the difference between a reaction coming due to an offense and a reaction coming due to karma? That's what you're saying. So how can we tell the difference? What is the difference if we get a reaction that's coming from offense or if we get a reaction that's coming from karma? That's your question.
Okay.
Is that it? Yeah, okay. All right, so does anybody have an answer before I get into it? Bhakta Josh.
No, I'm not answering this question.
Okay. But you also get a reaction too in your spiritual life. Also, another point is that we are supposed to have, when we take a diksha, then our previous karma is supposed to be finished. So then from that point, we're not suffering from our previous karma. So what are we suffering? Then what is it that's happening to us? And when we suffer? So.
That's debatable, isn't it?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, okay. Okay, so we'll stick to your question. That how do we tell the difference between the two reactions? What is the difference? What kind of reaction? So you're saying what kind of reaction will you get from Vaishnava Aparad and what kind of reaction you get from karma? Okay, let's go. Go ahead.
Well, samaham sarvabhuteshu namepeshu.
Yeah, right. Right.
Karma may be kind of like an automatic pilot.
Right.
Based on our karma. And whereas offense, Krishna personally is involved.
But I would say even our karma, Krishna personally is involved too. Because the second part, if you're serving Krishna, and Prabhupada says even from the time of your beginning of your surrender, then you're directly under Krishna's, it's not automatic now for devotees. It's not. Even your, whatever your, if you have some karma, it's also given personally by Krishna too. So therefore, it's going to be very difficult to tell the difference. So in that case, so both of them are given by Krishna. Now, if you become a devotee, if you surrender, take initiation, whatever, whatever. So therefore, then how do you know what's happening to you?
Well, let me put it in context.
Okay, this will help.
Saying this, I'm saying there's something, someone does something wrong, say like child abuse.
Right.
Or stealing money from another devotee or something like that. What, theologically, putting the practical side of the side for something,
right.
Theologically, should we be seen more as an offense and therefore it should be the way we deal with that perpetrator is to try to help them become free from that avarad, as opposed to just like, in a court of law in any country where you just kind of chuck them in jail or something like that.
Okay,
is there a different wound to the punishment that we're trying, or the correction that we're trying to inflict? Are we seeing it as something, it's like a mano sampita kind of thing, or more as a Vaishnava avarad kind of thing?
Okay, so somebody within ISKCON does some abominable action, then how do we...
Then that would affect another devotee.
That would affect another devotee. So then your question is, how do we respond to that?
In what light?
That, okay, has he... Is it due to his past karma?
No.
Or,
no. Do we deal with it as an aparad, or do we deal with it as a thing that needs a karmic reaction?
Okay, yeah, so a fall down, like... accidental fall down. No.
Against somebody, it has to be against. It has to be an offense. It's another devotee.
Okay. So, is it an offense, or is it just he's entangled?
Do we deal with it as an offense?
Do we deal with it as an offense?
Like say child.
Yeah. So okay.
The child is a devotee.
Right.
So, as the do we deal with it? As
okay. Is this an aparad or is this a criminal activity? That's your question.
I would like to offer that in both cases. Punishment for a crime is actually a sin for that purpose.
Yes.
So if the question is, are we able to handle that reforming process better than people out there? Should we hand it over to the official law, or should we keep it within us? That's the thing that we have to do.
Okay, this is actually a big topic. This would take us a long time.
Yeah, I know, it would take a long time. We'll just do it briefly.
I'm still trying to understand this point about the ministry of karma and
Okay, Mahavendra Puri, and then... Tatenu Kampam Smikshmana.
So there the DBT and T.
Yes.
The same time.
Hare Krishna.
However, because in his mind, the devotee may still maintain the remnants of his previous sinful mentality, the Lord removes the natural stage of the angelic spirit by dealing with the devotee punishment. That may sometimes resemble simple reactions. So this version of the book explained.
Okay, let's just say that for everyone. Because there's remaining, what is that, in his mind, there's remaining
previous
sinful sanskaras. So therefore, the Lord may deal with him, punish him in the same way as sinful reactions, as if it were sinful reactions.
The Lord uses the karma of the devotees to inflict a reaction or punishment, but that looks like this karma that is
not. Okay, so here Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says the Lord uses the karma of the devotee to inflict a reaction that looks like his karma, but it's not his karma. It looks like it, but it's not. So the Lord is actually doing it. And And I would say that whatever a devotee does after initiation could be considered an offense, because you're not, there's offenses not following the orders of spiritual master or whatever, whatever.
Well, by the way, just on that point, a nice little thing I heard from Bhavana Swami this summer, and he was quoting Baladeva Vibhusan's commentary on the Vedanta Sutra.
Right.
Just to elaborate that point, he said, Baladeva Vibhusan gives the example of if you take a piece of silk,
right,
and you hold it up to a flame, and you hold it up there for some time, and then you take it away, and you look at it, and it looks just the same. But then when you shake it, it completely crumbles, and all you're left is the two little pieces that are still in the fingers.
Right.
The whole thing crumbles. So he gives that example that may look like, the devotees look
we may live our life and it may look like we're going to karma like everyone else.
Right.
But with our contact with the flame of devotional service, it's actually...
Yeah, right, exactly. As soon as we surrender to Krishna in some way, then we're protected. Krishna says it. Prabhupada says, even, I know, he says so many times that you, even in the beginning of your devotional service, you're protected by Krishna. And Krishna's not a liar, Prabhupada said. He says, I'll protect you from your sinful reactions. When she had her hand up. Govinda, you had something?
It's kind of okay, but I thought that you said just in proportion of surrendering to Krishna, to live according to it, like,
he's
devoted to the degree how much he's devoted, then it's like
offense. Right.
And to that degree, as he's not, then it's like
karma. Okay, she's proposing to the degree that he's surrendered, to that degree it's an offense, and to the degree he's in Maya, to that degree it's karma. So, think about that. Because if we go away, if we leave, then we could be under the laws. We may think we're above the laws of karma, but we are. If we break our contract, then we're under the laws of karma.
To come back to this burning of the silver.
Okay, this is the last comment, and then we'll move on.
I just want to understand that. That means the non-devotee by performing simple, by getting a simple reaction, is not necessarily decreasing his productivity for future activities.
No, he's increasing. Part of the reaction is that you get desire to do more.
Yes, exactly.
That same thing.
He's increasing. Whereas for the body, it's increasing. So that's a crumbling or going away. That's the idea.
No, I think the idea was, do you know the context?
The idea is that in the case of the burnt silk, it's not held together by the strength of the press. Because in the case of an ordinary person, it's held together by the strength of the threads, and they're gone. Whereas for the devotees, at the burnt post, it seems to be held together, and they follow the same pattern. The threads are going in the same direction, and in fact, they're not held together by the threads. It seems they have an appearance, because the Lord allows this karma to follow this pattern only for the teaching of the Lord. But in fact, there is no karma, it's just an appearance of the same pattern.
Semblance. The Lord gives a semblance of our karma, but it's not our karma. Happy?
Yeah.
No karma. Finished. But just Prabhupada said, but don't make more. Don't act in such a way that you embrace death again. He says, we're free from death now. So once you become a devotee, you're free from death. But don't embrace death again. Yeah.
What Bhimata Thakur says that as soon as a person starts chanting the one name, he loses any claim for his karma. He cannot claim either good or bad.
Right.
So it seems like everything is already a separate story. It's not karma.
Suffering in simply by chanting.
Separate from
what kind of thing? Because what Bhimata Thakur says also chanting is on the letters.
Okay. We'll keep this till after the lecture. We have to go on now. Move on. Verse 31. Lord Brahma speaks. My dear Lord, your personality and eternal form cannot be understood by any person who is trying to know you through the different processes to understand you is material, as are its objectives and instruments. So Lord Brahma is representing the jnanis who try to understand but can't understand the Lord through empiric process of empiric knowledge. So the previous verse, Bhrigu was begging forgiveness for his offenses, and Bhrigu is also in that category of sages and those who are in that on the jnana side. So these illusioned persons such as Bhrigu and others, they also cannot understand the Lord, and thus they offend the Lord's devotees. And this includes the jnanis headed by Lord Brahma. So they're all like in this category, that because they don't understand the Lord, they don't understand devotees, they make offense. So therefore, Bhrigu is begging forgiveness for his offense. And Prabhupada said something very nice in the middle of this purport. He says the difference between the impersonalists and personalists is that the impersonalists, limited by their speculative processes, cannot even approach the Supreme Personality of Godhead, whereas the devotees please the Supreme Personality of Godhead through his transcendental loving service, sevan mukehi. Due to this service attitude of the devotee, the Lord is revealed to him. So second time, Prabhupada is stressing service attitude. Service attitude. If we have the service attitude, then we will see Krishna. Krishna will reveal himself. And that verse that Prabhupada partially quotes, sevan mukehi. Sevan mukehi jivada swayameva svaratyada. So we cannot perceive the Lord, just like the Gyanis. We cannot perceive him through our senses. But when we use our senses, beginning with the tongue in his service, then we can. He will reveal himself to us. So the devotees, they can understand the Lord by service attitude. There's a very beautiful verse that we heard last year in Kapiladev. This is 3:29:20. As a chariot of air carries an aroma from its source and immediately catches the sense of smell. Similarly, one who constantly engages in devotional service and Krishna consciousness can catch the Supreme Soul who is equally present everywhere. So Srila Prabhupada says, just like if you pass, if the wind passes over a garden, it catches the scent of the garden. And that scent catches your organ of smell. So your consciousness, if it is saturated with devotion, can capture Krishna as Paramatma in the heart. So this is what we are aiming for, to understand Krishna, catch Krishna. Now next is King Indra. King Indra said, my dear Lord, your transcendental form with eight hands and weapons in each of them appears for the welfare of the entire universe, and it is very pleasing to the mind and eyes. In such a form, your lordship is always prepared to punish the demons who are envious of your devotees. So Indra represents the power of the Lord's arms, and he's also himself in the purport gives the connection. So I didn't have to do it. This is four lines down. As Lord Brahma had said, to realize the transcendental form of the Lord is beyond the power of the senses. In reply to that statement by Brahma, King Indra said that even though the transcendental form of the Lord is not perceivable by the material senses, his activities and his transcendental form can be understood. That's quite interesting. At the beginning it says they couldn't understand him, but they're perceiving him. And now they're saying, you can't perceive him, but you can understand him. This is like what Indra is saying here. Prabhupada is saying, the Lord's uncommon features, uncommon activities, and uncommon beauty can be perceived even by an ordinary man. For example, when Lord Krishna appeared just like a 6 or 7 year old boy in Vrindavan, he was approached by the residents there. There were torrents of rain, and the Lord saved the residents of Vrindavan by lifting Govardhan Hill and resting it on the little finger of his left hand for 7 days. This uncommon feature of the Lord should convince even materialistic persons who want to speculate to the limit of their material senses. So Prabhupada himself gives a connection, and Indra is representing the power of the arms of the Lord, because that is the same power that Indra has. He is the chief of the heavenly planets, and he has his powerful arms to protect everyone in the universe from the demons. So that's also his seva. Verse 33, the wives of the performers of the sacrifice said, my dear Lord, this sacrifice was arranged under the instruction of Brahma, but unfortunately Lord Shiva, being angry at Daksha, devastated the entire scene. And because of his anger, the animals meant for sacrifice are lying dead. Therefore, the preparations of the yajna have been lost. Now, by the glance of your eyes, your lotus eyes, the sanctity of the sacrificial arena may be again invoked. So they're very practical. They're bringing it back to the current issue that the sacrifice is finished. You please do something with your glance. And how the connection that I saw, actually I didn't see, Oh, yes, I did see. That we saw Indra, who is appreciating the power of the arms of the Lord, how powerful the Lord is with all his weapons to protect everyone. So now the wives are also appreciating the power of the Lord, that you are so powerful, just by your glance, you can restore the animals to life and bring back the sanctity of the sacrifice. So they're appreciating the power of the Lord also in a different way. Okay, you're so powerful, so please do this for us. Please bring back the sacrifice. Restore the animals to life. Yes, Madhavendra.
Yes. It's a good prayer, but I find that they're a bit subjective.
Mm-hmm.
Because they don't even, they put the blame entirely on Lord Shiva. Completely overlooking the
yes. Yeah, so their vision is limited here. Yeah. But everyone has their own, that's the whole thing. Everyone has their, this, you see from the prayers how everyone's vision is limited by what they want. Everyone. Everyone is limited like this. Yeah. Everyone's subjective. Indra also, he sees the power of the arms. Yeah, it's obvious. Yeah. So anyway, they're just looking on the surface, you know, they're seeing the external. Lord Shiva destroyed the sacrifice, please bring it back. That's it. It's simple, very simple. They're just seeing, they're not getting complicated here. They're simple. Yeah? It will work. So then the example of the glance of the Lord, when in Krishna Leela, when the cowherd boys died, in the mouth of Vagashara, Krishna just glanced at them, brought them back to life. Again, when they drank the poisonous water of the Jamuna, poisoned by Kaliya, Krishna glanced at them, they came back to life. So, therefore, Krishna's glance has that power to restore people back to life. And they are pleading for this glance of the Lord. The verse 34. These sages prayed, "Dear Lord, your activities are most wonderful, and although you do everything by your different potencies, you are not at all attached to such activities. You are not even attached to the goddess of fortune, who is worshipped by the great demigods like Brahma, who pray to achieve her mercy." You can flip it for me. Yeah, it's the next one. Thank you. That's called first-class intelligence. And do something. So the sages are appreciating the renunciation of the Lord here. How the Lord is not attached even to Lakshmi. He's completely renounced. And the connection that I saw here was that the sages, they're glorifying this quality of renunciation. They're saying, because the wives, they were saying, "Lord, can you please do this for us?" So then the sages are saying, "Of course, you're not attached to doing anything. You don't have to do anything we ask of you." So they're just appreciating this. Oh, you don't have to do it, you know, you're renounced, you're not attached. Yes, Sankirtan. Rishaya. Rishaya. Rishaya, you know, different. There are so many, yeah, there's different gradations. Some of the sages are not acting as priests, and some are. I would say the priests are also, could also be sages. So, this is where in verse 34, about the Lord's renunciation. So, if the Lord is so renounced, even from Lakshmi, how does this renunciation manifest? Does he renounce to his devotees also? Does he renounce? How does the Lord manifest his renunciation, in other words? What is his renunciation?
The Lord renounces his Atmaram creature in favor of Dr. Vatsa.
Okay. That's interesting. He renounces his Atmaram, a feature of being self-satisfied, in favor of his Bhakta Vatsala, a feature of helping his devotees. Yes. Oh, that's good. He acts without attachment. Okay. He acts without attachment. Yeah, although he creates this whole thing, he's not attached. Name? No. Name Karmani Limpanti, is that the verse or another one?
That's
414. Yeah, and yours is? 3 something. Okay. 322.
I tried to charitable now, even though I'm missing to end.
Okay. So he has this, yes. Yeah, the sages, okay, here we go. Who are these sages?
Srinivasa Swami writes that these are the sages who are performing karma kanda activities. And therefore, they are very much attached to punya and the fruits of these activities.
Oh.
And therefore, when they don't see the Lord having to be along with those fruits,
right,
they're very astounded.
Okay, so they're astonished at the Lord's renunciation, that he's not attached like they are, attached to the fruits. Yes?
So, I mean, I haven't gone all the way up to 39 yet, but therefore you can perhaps see that the real connection here is what Madhavendra Purvi was bringing up, that people see the world through their eyes.
Yes, they do.
And that's a very important instruction for all of us, in order to check ourselves from thinking that the way we see things is objective reality, and also in dealing with other people.
Oh, so that's a very good point. That actually, everyone sees the world through their own eyes. So when you look here, you look at the list, you can see it right on paper, that how everybody's seeing differently the world through their own eyes. That,
it's not necessarily a bad thing.
No, we're not judging. We're not judging. We're just saying it's like this.
It's a bad thing just in our own eyes. It's a bad thing if we don't recognize it.
Yes.
But then we might but it's a good thing if we can recognize.
If we can recognize, yeah, like the Brahmins say, we're fallen, we're cursed by Lord Shiva. So therefore we're attached to the fruits. They said that. We're fallen, Brahmins. Bhrigu says, I'm an offender. I've made offense. Please forgive me. So yes, they are understanding. I get the feeling that they know that they're understanding their position.
Well, the problem about the sages say, no, he's really renounced. And the Bhrigu says, no, he really just meant to get demons and satellite on the
wall. Right. So, but they're not fighting. They're all in harmony here. So that's nice that they're all praying. And this is an example of working together to please the Lord. Unity and diversity. And we'll get to that at the end of this chapter. Prabhupada will bring that up, actually. Next, tomorrow, that will be brought up in a purport. And exactly what philosophy that represents of ours. You'll find out tomorrow. Yes? Atmavan Manite Jagat. Yeah, that applies here. Atmavan Manite Jagat. Okay, what? Yes, positive, yes. It can be positive also. Yes?
So we have our views, and the problem is when we impose our views on others.
Right.
And I like the saying of whenever he says something, he says, in my opinion, whatever value it may have.
Okay. So it's important. So I just have a really nice quote here from 11th Canto, which explains the Lord's, even though he may be renounced towards some people, he's not renounced towards his devotees. And this is Lord speaking to Uddhava. He says, Natate, of course it's not he's exactly renouncing them, but he's saying, who is most dear to me? Natata me priyatamat mayoni na shankara na chasankashana na shi naivatma chayata bhavan. My dear Uddhava, neither Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, Lord Sankarshan, the goddess of fortune, or even my own self are as dear to me as you are. So the devotees, they're very, very dear to the Lord. And we could go into that verse, but I won't because we're a bit late here. We'll go on to the next one. Verse. That's 11, 14, 15. And there's a very beautiful purport to that, so you can read that also at your leisure. Verse 35. The Siddhas prayed, like an elephant that has suffered in a forest fire, but can forget all its troubles by entering a river. Our minds, O Lord, always merge in the nectarian river of your transcendental pastimes, and they desire never to leave such transcendental bliss, which is as good as the pleasure of merging in the absolute. So the siddhas are actually representing bhakti, devotee. The only relief is to absorb our minds in the nectarian river of the pastimes of the Lord. So they're giving us actually bhakti here. This is the solution for all problems. So the connection, we heard about the Lord's renunciation. So what I saw here was that although the siddhas are praying, although you are detached, still you nevertheless you act. You don't just renounce everything. Still you act. And our minds always merge in the pleasure of meditating on your wonderful pastimes and activities. So we are appreciating your activities, that you may be renounced, but still you come and you perform activities, pleasure pastimes for your devotees. So these siddhas, they're very powerful. They have all the eight mystic powers. But despite all their powers, they say they're suffering. They're comparing themselves to elephants tortured by the heat of a forest fire. So there, even though you may have all the mystic powers, that doesn't prevent some suffering in this world. So in the purport sentence 2 and 3, the residents of Sitaloka have full control in the eight kinds of yogic perfection, but from their statement it appears that they are pure devotees. They always merge in nectarian river of hearing pastimes of the Lord. So now we're getting the viewpoint of the pure devotees, the siddhas, that they're very happy just to hear pastimes of the Lord. So what does it have to do with the sacrifice? Also a devotee, and she's also representing bhakti. That she's saying, please, all I want is that you're happy. You just be pleased here with us. So this is the mood of the devotee. Again, that the Lord should be pleased. She's continuing that your appearance, the siddhas are happy meditating, or hearing the pastime, she's happy just seeing the Lord. I'm very happy to see you. Your appearance is beautified, has given us great happiness. Because without you, nothing is beautiful in this world. Since only you can make our sacrifice complete, we beg you be pleased with our offerings. So Prabhupada said that she was the aunt of Lord Vishnu, and she was asking a personal favor because she has some connection with him. She has connections here. So she's asking personal favor. How is she the aunt of Lord Vishnu? In what way? Yes? Yes, Kapila Dev is her sister's son, so that makes her the aunt of Kapila Dev, the Lord, who is none different from Lord Vishnu, who is appearing in the sacrifice. And she's also representing the position of bhakti. You please, be pleased. So Prabhupada says that she was asking the favor of Lord Vishnu in an affectionate mode. Since she was his aunt, she sought some special favor. She requested that he be pleased, appreciating how he beautified the sacrificial arena by his presence. So Lord Kunti Devi had the same. She was also the aunt of Krishna, and she had the same realization, exactly as Prasuti. And this is 1839. O Gadadhar Krishna, our kingdom is now being marked by the impressions of your feet, and therefore it appears beautiful. But when you leave, it will no longer be so. So here's two aunts of Lord Krishna, and they both have the same realization. That without you, nothing is beautiful, and because you're here, everything is beautiful. And please, just be pleased. So this is the prayer of a devotee. 1839. If you want to... Pardon me? 37? We're on 36 now. No, I quoted from Kunti Devi. It wasn't one of these verses. Yeah, it was 1839. It was a quote from Kunti Devi. Yep, yes. Yes. Without a head. Oh, did she say that?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Hey, I didn't catch that. You hear what Adi Purush said? He said, well, where is that? That's the verse, huh? Oh, yeah. The sacrificial arena is not beautiful without you, just as a body is not beautiful without the head. So her husband, she's praying for personal experience. Her husband is not beautiful without his head. So the sacrifice is not beautiful without Vishnu. Huh? Yeah, it's quite interesting. There's things going on here that Yeah, that's thank you for that. That's really good. So things are going on here, you know, behind the lines that we don't always catch. Verse 37. Now the Lokapalas will speak from their own, again, their own view. The governors of various planets spoke as follows. Dear Lord, we believe only in our direct perception, but under the circumstances, we do not know whether we have actually seen you with our material senses. By our material senses, we can simply perceive the cosmic manifestation, but you are beyond the five elements. You are the sixth. We see you, therefore, as a creation of the material world. So just imagine the Lord standing before them, and they say, well, you must be a creation of the material world, because that's because we all we know is we can only see things of this world. So you're in this world, so therefore you must be also material. That's what they're saying. Well, but they're admitting it. So they're representing, see, they have a big position. They're in charge of a whole planet. So they're representing people who are puffed up with opulence. And that's what Prabhupada says in the purport. Governors of the various planets are certainly material, opulent, and very puffed up. So that is their perception. That Prasuti was seeing, was appreciating the beauty, how the Lord is appearing, and it's making everything beautiful. And but they're looking at the appearance of the Lord, and they're saying, well, to us it appears that it's material. Your appearance is material. We can't, because we don't see anything spiritual with these eyes. So how can we see you? You're above this. That you must be material. So they can't figure it out. How, of course, even us, we were seeing Prabhupada, and he was spiritual, and we couldn't figure it out either. He didn't look like he was here. It looked like sometimes we look at it, we just look. And it didn't look like he was in the same room as, I mean, he was there, but he wasn't there at the same time. Look, I think Achyutananda Swami put it very nicely, like a projection. Like a projection. That's how, like he was, anyway, that's how it looked to our material eyes. Verse 38, Yogeshwaras. Again, they are devotees. The great mystics said, Dear Lord, persons who see you as non-different from themselves, knowing that you are the supersoul of all living entities, are certainly very, very dear to you. You are very favorable toward those who engage in devotional service, accepting you as the Lord and themselves as the servants. By your mercy, you are always inclined in their favor. So there's actually, in this prayer, there's two groups of living entities that are being described by the great mystics. So the first is the Jnana Mishra Bhaktas and the Yoga Mishra Bhaktas. Like the Yoga Mishra Bhaktas, they see the Supersoul. They understand the Lord is the Supersoul. But the second are those who engage in devotional service. So they are, he's even more dear, and this will be explained in the purport. I'll read some of the purport. That person, this is near the end. Persons who are in full knowledge of the personality of Godhead, now these are the Jnanis, Jnana Mishra Bhaktas, analyzing his different energies and knowing their own constitutional position are certainly very, very dear to the Lord. So this implies also theoretical knowledge. So the Jnana Mishra Bhaktas. Then the next sentence, persons, however, those who may not even be conversant with knowledge of the Supreme Personality, but who always think of the Lord with love and faith, feeling that he is great and they are his parts and parcels, ever his servitors, are even more favored by the Lord. So there's two different ones here. There's the Jnanis, they know all about him, they analyze the energies and everything, but they're not engaged in service. And then there's the devotees. They're more favored. The particular significance of this verse is that the Lord is addressed as Vatsala. Vatsala means always favorably disposed. The Lord's name is Bhakta Vatsala. The Lord is famous as Bhakta Vatsala, which means he is always favorably inclined to the devotees, whereas he is never addressed anywhere in the Vedic literature as Jnani Vatsala. So this is the connection that the Lokapalas, they were unable to understand the Lord's appearance, And here the Yogeshwaras are saying even those who do understand you and your energies are not as dear to you as your unalloyed devotees who see themselves as your servants. So they're saying we don't understand, but the Yogeshwaras are saying even those who do understand, they're not as dear as your devotees, your pure devotees, unalloyed devotees. Yes. Well, whenever Prabhupada talks about this type of personality, usually he's talking about the residents of Vrindavan, the gopis, the cowherd men. They had no knowledge. No, we cannot imitate that. Okay, I don't need knowledge. I don't care for knowledge. This is sahajya. I don't care. I don't need to know all these lower things. So that's the danger, that we don't imitate. We appreciate the position of these devotees who are with, even without any knowledge, they are very so dear to the Lord. They're pure devotees. But we have to cultivate our knowledge of Krishna. So sambandha gyan. And then someday we'll come to that point that we also. Actually, there's a nice lecture where Prabhupada compares Vyasadeva with the gopis. Vyasadeva was very learned. He had all this knowledge. But he is not as dear to the Lord as the gopis, who did not have that knowledge. They were very simple in their devotion. And so that, generally, that's the example that Prabhupada gives in reference to this type of description. Okay, so we'll stop here. Any more discussion on any of the verses? We'll continue the prayers tomorrow.
It takes 10 years to leave out in another place.
What takes 10 years to leave out means what?
Burnout?
Okay, the reaction.
To exhaust.
Okay, what karma, what takes 10 years to exhaust your karma in another place?
Takes one day
in Vrindavan, no wonder.
I believe it.
Those who have lived in Vrindavan for any length of time can attest to this statement. Mathura Mahatmya. And I know I'm conversing with Prabhupada's lectures where he says that even if you're a criminal in Vrindavan, you're helped by the Dham. He says, you're helped, but next life you will definitely become a hog, dog, or monkey if you're a criminal in Vrindavan. Or if you're an offender in Vrindavan. Next life you'll become dog, hog, monkey, and it'll be your last birth because you can't make any more offenses in that body. You just suffer. Yeah.
So, not only for the devotees, but just in general, for a pious person, punishment comes very quickly.
Yes. Okay, in Vrindavan.
Not everywhere. Just in general. For a pious person.
For a pious person. Oh, okay. I didn't know that. Punishment comes very quickly for a pious person. Punishment for any transgression.
Whereas for a sinful person,
it may take a long time. That's why we see the sinful persons are enjoying. And we're thinking, how come they're enjoying and the pious people are... So, but in India, the pious people are enjoying too. They're usually wealthy and well off.
So it's a mercy.
Yes. It's mercy. So just remember that next time your karma hits, that it's a mercy for the pious or for the devotees that it comes very quickly. And if you're in Vrindavan, it takes only a day instead of 10 years. So in fact, you can experience, you may even go through many births while you're in Vrindavan. Many, many births. You don't have to go through those births again. You die many, many times in Vrindavan. Or almost leave your body or change your subtle body or any of these choices. Yeah, I know. I how many times I've changed my body already. Yeah, okay, anything else? When something's happening to you, if you're introspective, you can usually understand why. And what I find is until you understand why, it's going to keep happening. Until you find, okay, I learned my lesson. I know why. You can stop. Anything else? Okay, no more discussion. We'll stop early today, 20 minutes early. And no, it's 11:15. So tomorrow we'll continue with the prayers and we'll finish the chapter 7.